right, we're going to go straight into our interview. I've got in the studio with me Sam Gray. Good morning.
Good morning.
So now we were going to talk to you because you were going to be at the Creative Market this weekend, and now you're not, but we thought, what the heck, we'll talk to you anyway. So welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
And you call yourself, or what you do, Cone Hill Soaps. So you make soap that you sell at the market?
Yeah, I've been making goat's milk handmade soap for the last 2 or 3 years now. Just started at the Raglan Markets over Christmas, but really enjoying it. Unfortunately, I can't go this weekend because I've got to go to work. But yeah, really enjoy it. Cone Hill is based from our farm. We're actually a sheep and beef farm out in Waitatuna. And since I make the soap on the farm, we decided to call it Cone Hill.
Right. And why goat's milk?
I just prefer the ingredients in it and the way it feels on your skin. It's got some good qualities for it that I just decided that was going to be my base ingredient.
You have goats?
No.
Oh, okay. Where are the goats?
I just have to buy it from some place. Okay. Yeah.
So it's different to cow's milk?
Yeah, it's got a lot more nutrients in it that's better for your skin. It's quite different to cow's milk, but I find it really smooth on your skin and quite moisturising.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll take your word for that. I'm not much of an expert. so you make... How did this start? Because you said you've only been doing it for a few years, so...
Yeah, originally I just assumed that soap was just made in a factory and it was just, you know, too hard to make. And my mother started buying handmade soaps and she was like, there's a lot of people around New Zealand making soap. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And she's like, well, you've got a science degree. You can make this yourself. I'm like, oh, okay.
So, but what's the science? What aspect of science was the degree?
Agriculture. So it's a little bit different.
Kind of, but not really.
Yeah. You still have to learn all the process of in a lab and measuring and all that kind of thing. So it was, loosely based on science.
So
I started looking on YouTube at how people make these soaps, and it's incredible how many people on YouTube are making soap, and it's amazing watching it that I kind of just got hooked into it and had to start making it.
Okay. Did these same people also have kits that you could buy or things like that? Is that how you started?
Normally you would buy a kit, yes. That would probably be the best idea to do. I decided to just start from scratch, which took a bit more time to get the master of.
Okay. What was the first batch of soap like?
The first one was good. The next three were terrible.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did you start thinking, oh, this is easy?
Yes, I got that fluke and I'm like, this is so easy, I can keep making this. And then the next three were complete disasters and had to go in the bin.
What happened to them? Were they not like solid or?
I didn't buy the correct ingredients. The fragrance oils that I use in them basically seized the batch and it was straight in the bin.
Was it runny or?
Oh, it went
solid, rock hard.
Basically, when you're making soap, it makes like a liquid thing and then you pour it into a mold and it sets overnight.
Yeah.
As soon as I added the fragrance oil into these ones, it seized straight away to a hard lump inside my bowl, which wasn't actually soap.
Oh, no. Oh, so yeah, you had to get it out of the bowl as well.
Yeah.
Clean the bowl up afterwards.
Yeah.
Are you quite good at cleaning soap off stuff? You get bits of soap like.
Yeah, you do get soap everywhere. Luckily, cleaning soap's easy because it turns into soap, so then you can just wash it off.
As I was asking that question, I was thinking, oh, this, I know what the answer's going to be, but it just came out of my mouth.
Yeah, you usually leave, I leave all my tools and stuff overnight, so the mixture sort of makes soap overnight, and then you can clean it off, and it's way more easier.
Okay. And do you enjoy the experimentation? Like, I know you've got like quite a number of different soap bars.
Yeah, I enjoy creating different colours and different fragrances. My personal favourite is the tops of them. I like to put flowers and little starfish and flowers and different colours, and I like that aspect of it being more creative than just the standard square bar of soap.
Did you consider yourself a creative person before you started doing this?
Oh, I like sewing and that kind of like hands-on stuff. I wouldn't say I'm arty, so my soaps are very, I'd say, calculated in a way. I like to have everything uniform and things like that, so I'm not quite as artistic as a lot of people are.
Folks, I'm looking at the soaps on the website at the moment. They actually do look quite artistic, so you might be doing yourself a slight disservice there. on there's the black one that looks that's an interesting. You've got how do you do that? Because sorry, folks, I've got to describe the soap is almost black, but it's got some white lines through it, like sedimentary layers.
Yeah,
I guess that's how you do it.
I split the batch into three different amounts, and then I just pour it layer by layer. In between each layer, I then sprinkle some of the white powder in between it.
Yeah.
And then you can, once that sets, then you can pour the next layer. So it does take three times as longer to do those bars because you can't just pour everything together.
Oh, okay, right, a lot more work.
Yep.
And that one's on sale too. That should be more expensive. do you find sometimes you got carried away with like, oh, if I do this, like this could look really cool, and then actually it's not actually very good at being soap?
Well, my recipe is exactly the same in every single soap bar.
Okay.
Just so I know, well, I found a recipe that I like, and it's taking me 2 years to get a recipe that I am willing to sell.
Really?
So I keep, I keep my recipe the same, so I just change the tops.
Okay, and the colours.
And the colours, yes.
Yeah, and there's a lot of swirl in it, like marbling as well, so.
Yeah, you get your two pots, one, say, white and one pink, and then you just pour them together into the mold and they swirl around and it makes some awesome patterns. So it means that every bar of soap is actually different to the other ones.
Now, why did it take 2 years to get the formula to your satisfaction? I know you have a day job.
Yeah.
You have a whole life outside of soap.
I'm very particular on what I sell. My first bars of soap, yes, they were technically soap, but they didn't feel nice on the skin. They didn't last as long. So I prefer to have a soap that's going to last long in your shower or your bath and that just feels luxury on your skin.
Okay.
So I changed around with different amounts of oils, different ingredients, and I ended up putting pretty much everything that I could into the soap bars. And I do get told that I put too much good ingredients in it, but I'd prefer everyone to have a luxurious feel with them.
Who's telling you that?
Other soap makers.
Other soap makers. It's because you're doing a better job, perhaps. So you started selling it a little while ago, and I think I read somewhere on the website that it was actually started selling pretty well and you had to increase the size of your
gear. My molds and stuff,
yeah.
I used to just make 10 bars at a time in a loaf mold, which I thought 10... Well, when I first started making 10 bars, I'm like, wow, this is heaps, I'm never going to sell this. And yeah, quite quickly became popular and I had to start making, I think I'm making 109 bars in a batch at the moment.
Right.
Which seems crazy to me, but it goes really quickly.
So we were just talking off the air, you didn't seem terribly dedicated to social media for this, like you weren't like really pushing it on the social media. So how are people discovering your soap?
Really just word of mouth. People in Raglan just love talking about homemade products. And, yeah, the more people I talk to, the crazier it is that it gets spread around. Obviously, doing the markets definitely help.
Yeah.
So the Raglan markets definitely push my my sales up. And I've got a few stalls, a few stands and a few stores around Raglan.
Okay, yep. And you're not, we were just talking before, people, if you're thinking this sounds good, Sam won't actually be at this market this weekend, but you might be at, hope to be at others.
Yeah, I hope to be back from work in a week or so time, so I hope to be at the 23rd of April market.
So let's just talk a little bit about your work, because you weren't even sure a few days ago, you were like, let's do the interview. I know I'll be in New Zealand for the interview, but I don't know if I'll be here the day of the market, and you only found out recently. What sort of work does that to your life?
I work in the mining industry. We're a crew that used to be based from Timaru, but now we're based all throughout New Zealand, and we fly around the world to mines, and we reline mills, which is what is a big cylinder that spins around and breaks all the rock up and gets all the minerals out that they're mining in that mine, and we reline the lining inside of that wears away.
Okay, and why do you not? Because I also talked to you off the air. Where are you going next? And you're not terribly sure, apart from you going to Australia on Sunday. Why don't you know everywhere you're going?
There's engineers that work at these mines, and they're constantly scanning these mills to see the wear of them. And obviously, it's a multi-million-dollar operation to do this, so they don't want to be too hasty in replacing the linings. So we basically get a week's notice when they want to replace them.
And I guess if they're paying, then
you
guys do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you get into that work?
My dad has been doing it for the last 7 years. Originally, because I'm from Timaru, a company started there and it was just all Timaru people.
Yeah.
And then he got into that job, and then I sort of got into it this year.
It's kind of following your father's footsteps, but you're actually working with him.
Yes. Yeah, I'm working with him.
How's that?
The last job, he was on night shift and I was on day shift, so we didn't actually really see each other. He's from Timaru, so I flew to Australia with him and then didn't really see him much.
Okay. I'm trying to imagine what working with my father would have been like. I'm not sure. He's a school principal, though, who's used to bossing people around, so it probably wouldn't have been a good vibe. And you also, you're involved in motor rallying as well. So, is that right?
Yes, yep. Yeah. Rallying, gravel rallying and tarmac rallying.
Yeah. You seem to have quite a busy life.
Yes.
Are you involved with the farm as well that you live on? Like running the farm?
Not day-to-day running, but if they need a hand with stuff, we can jump in and do things if we're in the country.
Yeah. Do you sleep much?
No, not really, no.
So what sort of motor rally have you been into? Are you still doing it?
Yes, I'm doing it. I just got back from Dunedin on Monday. We just had our first round of the National Championship down there.
Okay.
So it's gravel rallying. I also do tarmac as well, a different series. But we actually had a round here a few months ago with the WRC.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you were involved with that.
So, I was a competitor in that rally.
Do you know these roads really well around here?
Yes, yeah, we definitely know the Whanganui Coast and Te Huruwai and Te Akau, north and south.
It makes a difference, knowing the roads?
I'm an eco-driver, I'm not driving, so I can only give the driver as much description as I can.
Okay, And how did you guys go? Was it a good rally?
The WRC one?
Yeah.
We finished just. It was a very wet rally, and day two up at Whangarei, it was quite treacherous. A lot of cars end up crashing. And
is that right?
Yeah, we haven't really had a wet rally like that for a long, long time, and it sort of caught quite a few cars out.
I remember on the day, because they were asking us if we would come and just set up, we've got a gazebo and we can do stuff out in the community, and we were like, we saw the rain was coming, so we didn't do it.
Yeah.
But the rain in town actually was barely any rain. There was just some light spots at times, so it felt like it wasn't that bad. But were you guys experiencing different conditions out there?
Yeah, it was. The Raglan stages weren't as bad, but the Whangarei stages, they were pouring down.
Okay.
Yeah, you couldn't get out of the car. Like, you had to stay in the car all day because you don't want to get wet and steam the car up. And
it's like COVID but worse. So have you been in some crashes?
Yes, I've had a couple of crashes.
What's it like? I've never been in a car crash. Tell me what.
I guess in a rally car, like, I would much prefer to crash in a rally car doing 200 than in a road car doing 80.
Right.
We have so much safety gear. We have a 6-point harness, helmets. We have fireproof overalls.
Yeah.
A roll cage. So, yeah, I've had a crash where we're rolling down a hill and we hit a tree stump on my side of the car, like in the window. And it sort of came through the window a little bit, but I looked up and saw the roll cage was still perfect. So you sort of just relax and go, okay, well.
You relax?
Yeah. As we keep rolling, I was relaxing more and more, knowing that the car's not going to get out of this. We're done for the day. I don't try and dig a hole and get the car out of the hole or something stupid.
Yeah.
We're done. But so, yeah, you sort of just, once you've had your first sort of hit, you sort of make sure your bones aren't broken and you're like, okay, I'm all good now.
It makes it sound like you were rolling for quite a long time, that you were having all these different thoughts.
Yeah, it was about 5 or 6 rolls. In each roll, you go further, you go, okay, this is fine. It's dissipating now, so it's getting better and better.
Wow. That's such a different outlook on crashing a car.
Yeah.
I would expect people to not really have known much about it in a crash. Like, 1 minute they're driving, the next minute it's they're lying in a piece of wreckage. But
yeah, the best thing is to relax.
Relax the body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've been told, I don't surf or anything like that, but surfers are very good at crashing because they know how to relax their body. From when they fall into the waves, they've got to relax. Yeah. And if you can do that in a car accident, you're going to be fine.
Yeah. So you don't, do you need to go see a chiropractor or osteopath or someone like that afterwards?
Oh, one crash, we had an instant stop from 160, so that was a little bit niggly. I did compress my spine in that, but...
What does instant mean? Like,
so we were coming, it was in the dark, in the rain, in a forest, and we were zooming down this road, and we didn't quite have our notes correct, and we came up to this incredibly tight corner, and we just had to chuck the car sideways and chuck down a few gears and hope that we were going to get around the corner, and we didn't quite, and we clipped a tree stump right behind my back, and it spun us into a bank to a dead stop.
So you hit an immovable object, basically, yeah, in the form of the bank.
Yeah, so instead of the bank moving, we stopped.
They can mess you up. And who pays for the car when these things happen?
The driver.
Who's the driver?
I change drivers quite a bit. So, yeah, it can be anyone, really.
Is it like that? Like the co-driver is...
There's different aspects. Like, rallying is quite a family sport. So quite often you might get like a brother and sister co-driving, or my partner, his co-driver is his mother. So... Yeah, you can get quite a few families. So they sort of tend to stick together. My parents compete, but I've only done a couple of rallies with Dad. I tend to just change around probably more of the professional teams.
I was going to say, how do your parents feel about you rallying? But obviously they do it themselves. So yeah. Most parents would freak out. I really don't want my kid doing that.
They didn't want me doing it.
Oh, anyway, okay.
Yeah, it took a lot of convincing to let them make do it. But
how old were you when you were trying to convince them?
I started at 12, because you can start co-driving at 12.
Wow.
I didn't start competing until I was 20.
Okay.
So it took a few years.
Yeah, but they've only got themselves to blame, really, haven't they?
Yeah, they didn't want me doing it, not because of the safety aspect, but more because of the addictiveness of it and how expensive it is. So I kind of got addicted to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that part of why you're so... So, folks, we're talking to Sam Gray about rallying. We started off talking about soap you make. I'm just trying to figure out how you fit all that in. Obviously, you probably need to earn lots of money to pay for the rallying, which is partly why you're so busy.
Being a co-driver, I don't have to pay for much. Getting to a certain level, it sort of becomes that you're kind of like a wanted co-driver, and then you can even get paid to do it at a certain level overseas and things like that. So, luckily for me, rallying doesn't cost me a huge amount, just my safety gear and my licenses and things like that. Obviously it's a bit more of a cost for the drivers, they've got to maintain the cars.
Yeah.
So I'm, in that respect, I'm quite lucky. And my partner and I, we work on rally cars, well, it's his day job, and I sort of help him out when I can. So we're very different in the rally community, because we actually make money from it.
Oh, okay.
Others don't, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like a lot of stuff in New Zealand, it's such a small country that I guess maybe you have sponsors, but there's not enough money in sponsorship for this market.
Yeah, we definitely have to rely on sponsors, and we're very grateful that they come on board and help us out. Of course, you can't really get enough sponsorship to cover the whole championship, but you know, every little bit helps.
Yeah, otherwise you have to have, I guess, most people in New Zealand funding it from somewhere else as well, like from their own personal funds.
Yeah, you've got to basically have a business of your own type thing and be able to do it. There are a lot of young kids that are doing it, and they're getting help from their parents, and you can actually do the sport on a cheap level, just in like club level. Obviously national championship is a lot more expensive, and there's not many cars doing that. At a club level, you can just buy like a $5,000 car, put a roll cage in it, and just rally it,
and
your expenses are very limited.
And there was a tarmac rally recently out on the road to Ruapuki, I think.
Yeah, so we had Targa, Waikato. So we were sort of based around Pukekohe. I compete in that also. It's a completely different kettle of fish. It's tarmac, which is very different to gravel.
Yeah.
So you have completely different cars, but I'm lucky enough to compete in both championships.
And you're saying like you can do it with a pretty cheap car. Like I think I saw some old Ford Escorts out there.
Ford Escorts are not cheap.
Are they not? Is that right?
Yeah, they...
like the cars that are built... I'm talking about ones that I remember from when I was a kid, like they're made in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, Escorts... Ford spent a lot of money developing them to become rally cars.
Oh, okay.
So they're very... Especially a two-door Mark II Escort, they're very hard to come across.
Because there's it's so long since they made them, so I guess they're
sitting
on the ground.
Over in Ireland now, they're actually making new shells because they're so popular in rallying. They're one of the best cars you can get for classic rallying.
There you go. I was curious, like, that's such an old car. I was wondering why I saw them still out there.
Yeah, well, there was a Ford Escort competing in the Tarmac Rally just a couple of weeks ago, and I think he got fourth or fifth overall.
Okay.
And he was competing.
Because I also would have thought they'd be last, right? So
No, this one is an impressive one. It's got, obviously not got a standard engine in it. It's got a high-performance engine, so you can definitely move along quite quickly.
Yeah. So, we started off talking about the soaps in the market. Obviously, you're not going to be at this market. You hope to be at future markets. I think there's another one. I've got a poster over there. There's one on the 23rd.
Yeah.
And then there'll be another one 2 or 3 weeks after that. So, hopefully, you'll be at one of those with your soap.
Yes.
And if people want to get your soap, if they heard the conversation earlier with Sam about the soap and you want to buy some today, they can do it at the website, yeah?
Yeah, you can go to the website or you can pop down to the Raglan Museum, the iHub. They've got soaps there for sale, and also Hardy's Fishing and Hardware Store.
Okay. I wasn't expecting you to have it in a hardware store, but why not? And what's the address of the website?
www.chn.net.nz.
Okay, and you also have other things other than just the soap bars. You've got bath bombs, got gift boxes, which I imagine they were pretty good at the Christmas market.
Yes, we also have our Mother's Day gift box that is down at the iHub. You can pick that up.
Is that soon?
Yes, Mother's Day is about a month away, so yeah, it is coming up quite quickly.
Okay, all right, we'll keep that in mind. And shower steamers, what do they do?
I haven't got any at the moment, but I need to make some this week. But they sit in the bottom of your shower, and when the water falls on the shower steamer, it steams up and it smells like eucalyptus and peppermint. And it's basically, you know, when you're like a kid and you used to get Vicks rubbed on your chest when you were sick, it clears all your airways out and it smells exactly like that.
Okay.
So it's great for hay fever and colds.
That actually sounds really good. And the mini soaps, what do people use? Well, I know what they use soap for, and it's a small version of soap, but what's the deal with the mini soaps?
A mini soap is about a quarter of the size of the big bars. It's great for travelling because they come in their own little cotton drawstring bag. So yeah, great for travelling, great for gifts. If you don't want to commit to a big bar, you can buy some little ones and sort of try different flavours and you can change around. Originally, I didn't think they'd be that popular, but they have been extremely popular.
There you go, you find out, don't you?
Yeah.
And what sort of, we use the word flavour, what flavours, talk us about some of them. Actually, what's your favourite at the moment?
Oh man, black raspberry and vanilla. Definitely one of my favourites, and peony blush and suede. But then I've got ones that replicate perfumes like Chanel No. 5, Black Opium. Then you've got some like Scandinavian Pine, which are more like woodsy. You've got Manu Bay, which smells like beaches and sunshine.
Oh, does it?
Yep, that's definitely a popular one in Raglan.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
Yeah, then we've got fruity like lime, basil, mandarin, sugar plum.
Actually, some of them look like you could eat them.
Yeah, and it's kind of,
I've had that experience before at a market where I've seen these things from a distance and think, oh, they look quite tasty, and then it's almost disappointing to discover they're soap.
Yeah, please don't eat them. They won't taste very good.
You ever thought of making an actual a sweet that looks the same as the soap?
I would if I could. Not a very good baker.
Not a very good baker? I'm sure if you could find some time in your week, you might.
One day maybe.
One day maybe, yeah. Hey, folks, so yeah, talking to Sam Gray here, Conehill Soaps, and all the other things going on in your life too. I was interested to chat about that. So thanks for coming in.
No worries. Thank you.
And don't forget, folks, at Creative Market, without Sam, this weekend will be on from 10 till 2 on Sunday. But you should hope, maybe, you don't know yet, but maybe you'll be here for the market on the 23rd.
Yeah. All going well.
All right. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to have a little break and we've got some more music to round out the show after that.